You're listening to Resolution Radio. Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. What kind of society do we want? As our society breaks down into chaos and tyranny, we know that it cannot last. After the fire, a time of rebuilding is coming. What shall we build? A democracy? A constitutional republic? A theocracy? Shall we have unregulated free enterprise? Should we strive for equality or for hierarchy? The National Alliance and its underlying philosophy, cosmotheism, provide the answers to these questions. Come with me again to that small, darkened meeting hall in Arlington, Virginia, on a warm Sunday evening in the summer of 1976, as Dr. William Pierce is about to speak. This lecture was never recorded in audio form, but Dr. Pierce did publish the text in the Members Only National Alliance Bulletin in August of that year. I will do my best to convey his meaning truly. These are the words of William Pierce in the conclusion of one of his most important works, Creating a New Society. The same is true of many social illnesses besides just homosexuality. We can eliminate them by simply providing the people with healthy examples to live by. One can effectively suppress them by rounding up and shooting enough people. Or one can eliminate them by establishing a healthy social climate. Some illnesses call for the first cure, and some for the second. But in the long run, a society can be and remain truly healthy and truly progressive only if the tendency toward health and progress is naturally rooted in the great bulk of the members of the society, instead of being artificially imposed from above. Nevertheless, we are talking about a society which is willing and able to guide its members, to impose constraints, to set both positive and negative examples. And this implies the exercise of power, real and effective power, even if not in the form of direct police power. For we are certainly not talking about an anarchic society or a libertarian society in which everyone does his own thing. Today, even in our present society, far more social control is exercised by the mass media and by the schools than by the Congress and the President and the courts, with all their legislative and police and judicial powers. In our new society, should we simply leave these powers, the power of the media and the schools, up for grabs, to fall under the influence of whatever private groups can win control of them? Hardly. They are the very determinants of the type of society we shall have. They do more than anything else to set its goals and shape its institutions. And we must be sure that these goals and institutions are in accord with our purpose, with the Creator's purpose. So this means that society as a whole must assume certain powers, which are now either chaotically uncontrolled or are in the hands of the enemies of our people. How shall these powers be administered and exercised? That is a question we want to answer very carefully, after the greatest deliberation. But we can make some tentative suggestions now. We can say quite definitely, for example, that we are not interested in the conservative goal of restoring the Constitution of 200 years ago. We are not interested in minor variations on that theme either, which might allow, for example, some deviant person of great wealth or strong personality who favored reintroducing blacks or Jews into our society to control, say, 10% of the federal legislature if he could convince 10% of the public to vote for his party. We are, in fact, not even greatly impressed by the democratic axiom of one man, one vote. That was supposed to ensure against tyranny, but it has not quite lived up to expectations. Let us remember that our purpose, and therefore the purpose of our new society, must not be to provide the best possible climate for free enterprise, but to put us, as a race, once again on the path toward godhood. Because of this, it is likely that the privilege of choosing our society's leaders will be somewhat more carefully bestowed than at present, when it is merely necessary to have attained 18 years of age. It seems clear to me that our purpose tells us that we must envisage a society in which the electorate consists only of those members of society who are wholly dedicated to that purpose. Those who have the responsibility for choosing our society's administrators and decision makers must be persons who have proved, in deed as well as word, their dedication. We might envisage the attainment of electoral status as a crowning honor bestowed on our most worthy citizens, an honor not only entailing a great respect from the community, but also a great responsibility for the welfare and progress of the community. Being given the privilege of voting might be made a ceremonial occasion, a sacramental occasion, the most important occasion of a citizen's life, an occasion not unlike joining a holy order, in which the initiate takes a binding oath to fulfill his responsibility and to put his duties and obligations as an embodiment of the Creator and an agent of the Creator ahead of all else throughout the remainder of his life. This will be a status potentially open to all, but actually achieved by relatively few, the best and ablest of our race. And it will be their responsibility to exercise the ultimate power, to control the destiny of the society. Those few experts who actually make the day-to-day decisions will be answerable to their electorate. Now, there are many other aspects to the society we want, besides the determination of voting qualifications. In most cases, we must be very careful about being too specific, because the actual working out of the specific details is something which will require a great deal of thought and planning. Whatever we say now is only of a tentative nature. But we can be sure of some general things. We are sure that we do not want a society in which our truth, our understanding of reality, and of our purpose is but one idea in a competing chaos of ideas, a society divided against itself into 100 conflicting sects. We want a society which is not only racially homogeneous, but also spiritually homogeneous, a society which is a single indivisible community inspired by a single great truth, working for a single purpose. And we can be sure of some other things. We want a society based on blood instead of on gold, a society in which racial quality, in which life itself is the basic value, instead of money, as in today's society. It will be a society in which the importance of the family will not be so much as an economic unit, but as a biological unit, a creative unit. A society in which healthy, racially sound children will be the greatest treasure which can be produced, a treasure far more significant than today's gross national product. It will be a society which will judge its progress by the degree to which each new generation surpasses in racial quality the previous generation. The great task of our new society will be the upward breeding of the race. And this task will be shared by every institution of the society. We must have an educational system, for example, which not only prepares the child to lead an economically productive existence, but which instills in him a lifelong consciousness of his racial identity and his racial mission, a consciousness of the fact that he exists not only in the present, but that he is a link in the chain of generations which stretches from the distant past into an unlimited future, and that he has a responsibility to every other link, past and future, in that unending chain. We want a society without artificial barriers based on social class or on personal wealth or family connections, but one in which status is determined by the quality of the individual, and even more so, by the extent to which that quality, those talents and abilities and character, are used in the service of our purpose. The ordinary workman who strives always to do the best job he possibly can, whether he operates a lathe in a factory or a tractor on a farm, the workman who puts his soul into his work because he understands that he is working not just for himself, but for his racial community, and for the purpose it serves, such a person will be entitled to the highest honor and respect in our society. We want a society, finally, which in all its institutions and its policies, in its schools and its athletic programs, in its taxing policy and its welfare policy and its foreign policy, in its environmental programs and its military defense program reflects the one overwhelming fact that it is a society not of man alone, but of man as a part of God, as an embodiment of the divine spirit. It must, in its every aspect, reflect the beauty and dignity of a higher mankind. And as man ascends the Creator's path toward self-completion and total self-realization, our society must itself ascend that path with him.
You're listening to Resolution Radio, Radio, Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
My brothers, my sisters, I bring you a message of solidarity, a call to action, and a demand for adherence to duty of an Aryan resurgence and ultimately total Aryan victory. We have broken the chains of Jewish thought. We know not the meaning of the word mine, it is ours. Our race, the totality of our people. 10 hearts, one beat. 100 hearts, one beat. 10,000 hearts, one beat. We are born to fight and to die and to continue the flow. The flow of our people. Onward we will go, onward to the stars, high above the mud of yellow, black, and brown. So kinsmen, duty calls. The future is now. If months from now you have not yet fully committed yourself to the Alliance, then you have in effect not only betrayed your race, you have betrayed yourself. So stand up like men and drive the enemy into the sea. Stand up like men and swear a sacred oath upon the green graves of our sires that you will reclaim what our forefathers discovered, explored, conquered, settled, built, and died for. Stand up like men and reclaim our soil. Kinsmen, arise. Look towards the stars and proclaim our destiny. Defeat never, victory forever.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, Our churches and our employers have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
I believe in race. I'm not ashamed to admit it at all. And that doesn't mean one bit that I'm out to persecute or hurt any man because of his race. He can't help what race he is. We believe that each race has particular geniuses and particular faults. The white race has built white Western civilization, and we think the white race should dominate in that area. National socialism fundamentally is the application of science not only to inanimate objects and animals, but to mankind himself. We believe that the communists, the Marxists, have one fatal error in their doctrine. A place where absolutely there's a hole and there's no explanation for it. They admit evolution. They admit that animals vary by breed and that you can breed better and worse animals. Now, how do they explain how there is a sudden dividing line when you come to one particular animal called man? They have no explanation. Time and again when I've asked them, they have no explanation. They just say if it's got two legs and it stands on its hind feet, then it suddenly becomes a special being and there is absolute equality. They're all the same. Man is an animal just like all the rest of the animals. He's more intelligent, but he must obey nature's laws. And that insofar as he is an animal, he must obey the laws that pertain to animals. We say that when the white race has produced such a wonderful thing as Western civilization, we should treasure the people that have produced that and can maintain it. And we should not mix them all up with other kinds of civilizations, whether or not they're good. We should certainly try to preserve it just the way the farmer preserves his better grade of stock. We are also, socially speaking, tribalists. You must live as social beings. You have to live with other people. And this is impossible unless you observe certain fundamental laws of the tribe, the ancient Indian tribe, any kind of tribe of people, even a wolf pack, has got to have certain fundamental things. One of these things is leadership. Not leadership by the most popular, but by the strongest and the best. Any tribe or Indian tribe or any group or family should be led by the best and the strongest. Otherwise, it disintegrates. It's got to have group pride and loyalty. You've got to have selection in the mating process. Something that we have almost lost now. We believe that it is of fundamental importance to society that the strongest, cleverest, and the best of the men mate with the best type of women who will make good mothers. And when you destroy that machinery, you get what we have now. We believe that you have got to have an organic society. Now, by an organic society, we mean a society, not a dictatorship, but a society in which the parts of the society cooperate together in different functions and in peace and harmony, just the way your body works. Cancer is the wild, uncontrolled growth of cells at the expense of all the rest of the body, and that's what you have in Washington, D.C. right now. Cancer. We believe in private property and free enterprise. It is impossible, we believe, to have a society in which there is any real work going on unless people can get the reward of their effort. And at the same time, we believe you've got to have social justice. You cannot have people who are exploiting and squeezing little helpless people economically. And this is where I get in trouble with the conservatives, because most of today's conservatives, I've discovered, are reactionaries. They're real anxious to hold on to their money. They don't care how they have to figure it out. They just want those money bags. And they come up with any kind of rationale to keep it. Every national socialist believes in idealism, believes in something that is worth more than his own one single human life. He's willing to die for something. When you're ready to die for something, then you're alive. And until you are ready to die for something, you have no real fanaticism. And just to dinner a little while ago with some of the fellows there, they said, were telling me, well, it's terrible to be a fanatic. Well, did you ever stop and think how this country got here? How all the great inventions ever got there? Any one of you out there that is not a fanatic on something or other, whatever it is you're studying, if you're going to be a doctor, be a fanatical doctor. Otherwise, you'll be nothing. You'll just be an ordinary old chug-chugging guy, and when you die, nobody will notice it. But if you're a fanatic, you'll produce something great. You'll create. Creativity is fanaticism. Every creative genius has had to be a fanatic. Many of them have been burned at the stake. So we are ideological and idealistic fanatics. Just like the communists, by the way. In between the Nazis and the communists is the great mass of non-fanatics. The TV watchers and the comic book readers. I will say this. National socialism is the inevitable end product, logically, of evolution. If you believe in evolution, you've got to be a Nazi if you think about it long enough. You can't help it. But what happens is people short-circuit it. The minute they believe in evolution and scientific breeding until they come to that two-legged animal that stands up on its hind legs, then all the rules are up. We say that's not possible. You either believe in the scientific method and the truth, and you apply it to yourself without egotism, or else you don't believe in the scientific method and you're kidding yourself. Nazis believe in ruthless application of the truth, not only to inanimate matter and animals, but to you animals. People, all of us are the same insofar as we are animals and must survive and live as animals. And unless we breed ourselves better, we're going to get worse. That's what's happening. I do worship nature in that I'm humble. When I see the mighty, awesome power of nature, and believe me, I've seen some terrific power of nature, the typhoons off Japan during the war, earthquakes. I've been through some tremendous cataclysms on this earth. And compared to them, the atomic bomb is like a firecracker. Nothing. And when you start to think of the enormity of space, our spacemen are just going around at the very bottom levels of space. They're no place yet. There are over 100 million planets where life, just like here, could exist. And in the face of that awesome probability, not possibility, probability, I say it's ridiculous to be egocentric and say we are the center of all things. Everything turns around us. We Nazis are humble. When I look at nature and realize how ignorant and small and feeble and weak and little we are, Nazism is a philosophy of nature, a way of looking at the world. And as I've pointed out, we believe in tribalism. We don't think we're above that. We think that you've got to have pride in your family, pride in your race, pride in your nation. That's not something to laugh at. Patriotism and pride in family and pride in race is something we should be proud of and cultivate, work on, not get rid of. Finally, we believe in morals. We believe in the traditions of goodness, virtue. Now let me, I told you something about what we are, but I'll do as good as I can in telling you what I think our enemies are. And our enemies, make no mistake about it, are the Marxists. The philosophy of Marxism, I believe, is the enemy of all humanity. It's the reverse of humanity. We say communism itself is the most vicious, anti-social doctrine the world has ever known, and here's why. They completely deny the very basis on which any human order can exist at all. Without humans, or at least without civilized humans, you certainly can't have human order. And the communists say they don't believe in race. They believe in absolute equality. The pygmies, the aborigines of Australia, everybody. Send them, let them all come to Carlton, and they'll all write arias and books, and the cannibals will be producing the music and verses. That's all you have to do is educate them. And this simply is not true. This results in chaos, social chaos, which is what we have now. They don't believe in enterprise. They don't believe that people should work for themselves. They believe that the state should come and tell them what to do. They don't believe in private property. They don't believe that you can keep the fruits of your production. They don't have, above all, they have no spiritual ideal. We say the only thing that's worth protecting with your life is ideals and your family, your race, and your nation. And twice in my lifetime, I've been called upon to go out and risk getting killed. And I saw a lot of other young men doing this. young fanatics that they made out of it, by the way. They made us real fanatic haters of the Germans and fanatic haters of the Japanese. Nobody protested that that was bad to be a fanatic when we were fighting those Japs, and I assure you we all were. Finally, the communists, if you remember when they first got into our Russia, they are against morals. They had free love, no morals at all, everything was have a ball. And the result was they almost tore Russia to pieces. They just fell apart. Now, if you'll notice, they are almost puritanical in Russia. In order to make the thing work, they've had to go back to the very principles of tribalism which we're advocating. You can't work society with a communist pipe dream. Civilization is based on self-sacrifice, on the willingness of men to go out and die for what they believe in. When you get rid of that self-sacrifice, you get anarchy. Civilization is built because I am willing to give up something for my family. And the family is willing to give up something in order to have the town succeed. And the town is willing to give up something so the state can be in business. And the state is willing to give up something so the nation can succeed. Self-sacrifice is the first principle of civilization. Communism has got the fanaticism to destroy you, and it's doing it. And unless you can build up a counter-fanaticism for something you believe in positively, you will be destroyed. You are being destroyed.
Recently, there was a report out that among new babies that were born, this happened last year, minorities were now the majority, that whites were officially the minority.
And they're boasting about it. Khrushchev just said, America's so liberal, they'll never fight. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, but we're going to change that. It won't be quite so liberal. After we've had a chance to make America understand what it is and make it conscious of itself and its greatness and its people, and the white race understand that they're worthy of protecting themselves, that they don't have to keep humbling and downgrading themselves while other races are standing up and saying, look at us, how great we are. We keep saying we're ashamed of ourselves for being white. That's a terrible thing. The thing for each race to do is be proud of itself. And the white people and the good people of this country, when they finally realize that they can do that without hurting or being obnoxious to anybody else, they will finally become fanatics to survive, to keep this great country going.